So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Revolver.
The first thing I want to be done is to get that piece of crap out of my ring.
Come on.
Don't just get him out of the ring, get him out of the WWF. Because I've proved, son, without a shadow of a doubt, you ain't got what it takes anymore. You sit there and you thump your Bible and you say your prayers, and it didn't get you anywhere. Talk about your Psalms, talk about John 3:16. Austin 3:16 says, I just whipped your ass.
He is stone cold.
Come on, that's not necessary.
All he's got to do is go buy him a cheap bottle of Thunderbird.
All right, stop
and try to dig back some of that courage he had in his prime. As the king of the ring, I'm serving notice to every one of the WWF superstars. I don't give a damn what they are. They're all on the list, and that's Stone Cold's list, and I'm fixing to start running through all of them.
All right, Stone Cold Steve Austin. And his remarks?
Yes,
1996 WWF King of the Ring.
As far as this championship match is considered, son, I don't give a damn if it's Davey Boy Smith or Shawn Michaels. Steve Austin's time has come. And when I get the shot, you're looking at the next WWF champion. And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
Obviously anything but humble, the fourth prestigious King of the Ring, Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Welcome to Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting doing this podcast at the end of a day. I'm exhausted right now, Wei, but I'm ready to chat about wrestling.
There's always energy when we're talking about wrestling.
I have not had any coffee lately or any caffeine, so I am going strictly on my natural energy levels.
Okay.
My levels are not imbalanced.
As am I. Some real, I'm going to be my usual energetic, explosive self.
I noticed that ever since you've got this iPhone, you have ditched your laptop. It's just, you just walk around now with your phone, with notes, with everything.
This phone is really a small computer that I can hold in one hand.
See, I need, for something like this, I need a bigger screen than my phone.
Well, if you hold this phone up this closely, it's almost just as good as a big screen.
My old laptop is just about dead. It is right. Actually, it's over there now. I'm having someone, a computer technician, come into our office tomorrow to try and extract files from it. Uh-huh. The remaining files I need from that computer, and then I think I'm going to bury that laptop, which got me through university.
You're actually going to bury it?
Maybe.
Okay.
What else are you? What are you supposed to do with a laptop when it?
I think you're supposed to recycle them.
Recycle it.
Like to a computer. Like an electronics recycling.
Will they pay me for it?
I doubt it. I don't think so.
Because they're acquiring something. They're getting something of value.
It's your garbage, though. When you throw out garbage, do you expect to get paid for that?
Well, I'd rather, if I was treating this as garbage, I wouldn't expect anything back. But they want my laptop.
They don't really want it. It's just a safe place to deposit waste.
But they're going to get reuse out of this. They're going to be able to... recycling, by its nature, is recycle it.
Okay, so should you be paid for your recycling? Should you be paid for your composting?
I think there should be some tax incentives for... The more garbage you provide, the more... there should be an incentive.
What, to get paid for providing more garbage?
I'm not saying just your typical garbage, because I think there's an overabundance of garbage, and that's why we're dumping it in, you know, places like Detroit.
You should be paid.
But when it comes to recycling.
So the more recycling that you provide, the more you should be paid.
You're providing a service for the environment here.
It's not so much a service if you...
If I took a pop can, Wei, and I just decided to throw it in my trash,
yeah,
it'll never be reused again. I'm putting it into the wrong... composting or the wrong garbage.
Yeah.
But if I recycle it, I'm doing a positive.
But it should just be your civic duty to be doing these. You shouldn't have to be rewarded. You're helping yourself by doing this. No, you live in the environment.
I'm contributing to a greater whole. It's like donating money to a charity where I'm not necessarily going to reap any benefit other than personal satisfaction.
You are going to reap the benefit.
Who is going to reap more of a benefit? Me giving my laptop away for free.
Yeah.
Versus someone who's going to, wherever I get rid of this.
The answer is you, because you will no longer have this piece of garbage in your house. The other person,
this is all mental satisfaction. There's no tangible satisfaction that someone is going to get.
The other person will actually have to go through the work to break this piece of garbage apart.
Yeah.
And I don't know what they do with it. I don't know how they safely throw it away. But it's actually more work for the other person. I don't think they gain anything.
I'm just going to keep it.
You can keep it. Sure.
It's just going to stay here in this office.
Okay.
As a memory. Maybe I'll hang it.
All
right. Laptop, 2005
maybe we'll,
to 2012.
You know what? Let's give it away to a listener.
No, I'm not giving away. They okay. can buy it, maybe.
How much?
$10,000.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I'm pricing it out of the market.
Because there are people, I'm sure, that would want the computer that was used to make many podcasts.
Yep, that was what I edited every podcast on. And now I have moved over to Sony Vegas Movie Studio HD 11.0.
Great.
So if you want the full experience, everyone can head on over to Sony and download a free trial version. And then after the 30 days, I'm going to have to fully purchase this program. And that is what the new podcast will be edited on. Yeah. I'm hit and miss on this program. It's okay. It's not. It's no Vegas 4.0 though. Mm-hmm. It's designed for video editing.
Do you ever wonder how many people actually listen to all of this at the beginning of the review, or how many people just fast forward to the review itself?
I like to create difficulty though, because you don't know what part to fast forward to. You've still got to trial and error it
right.
with your fast forwarding.
Right.
And okay. then you got to stop and listen for a few seconds and say, okay, are they in the review? And then we'll go off on tangents in the review. So it's very difficult. You're better off just listening to the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
What else is going on, Wei? I feel this is the only time we ever get to talk about life.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is.
We have to use the guise of wrestling just to be friends.
What else is going on? Went to Fox and the Fiddle last night.
So did I.
Oh, yeah?
It was fun.
Where were you sitting?
I was sitting next to you.
Oh,
yeah, that was
right.
me. And what did you get? You got the chicken wings.
Yes, I got the chicken
How
wings.
Were they? Because I was going back and forth between this chicken wrap and the wings, and I wish I went with the wings.
The wings were good. I like them. They're, like, nice and, you know, they're not little tiny wings, and these were substantial wings, and they're, like, nice and, like, kind of crispy. Exactly the way I like them.
Well, that's excellent. I got the Chipotle chicken wrap, kind of small.
That's cool.
I was still hungry afterwards. I was debating ordering wings after it, but I was like, that might be excessive.
What is your favorite color?
Yellow.
Yellow is your favorite color?
Yep.
Okay. Why?
I love brightness, and I think it's a happy color, and it's an often overlooked color.
Yellow, I didn't know.
It's not a go-to color for a lot of people.
I take you for a blue guy.
I like blue as well. I do enjoy blue. It's a very pedestrian color.
Yellow over blue?
I would definitely take yellow over blue.
Okay.
What about you?
Green.
Green?
No doubt, yeah. You didn't know that?
Green is so, I don't know.
Don't say effeminate.
No, it's such a connotative color, because you think of green and you automatically think of Christmas or Ireland, and that's it.
I don't think of either of those things.
What do you think of when you think of green?
Money? I just think of the color, to be honest with you. But if I were to think of anything, it would probably be maybe like trees. Grass, plants,
pot.
No, I don't think of
plants.
That. No, I don't. I don't think of that.
Why green? Is it just?
I don't know. I've just always.
It's very outdoorsy, based on what you associate it with.
Yeah.
Are you
yeah.
an environmentalist?
I'm not at all. No, I'm not. Although I like looking at the environment. Sure.
We used to in grade two. We did this thing every year where you would write out a letter. To somebody, just a mystery letter, and then you would put the letter, this piece of paper, you would shove it into a balloon and fill it with helium, and then we would take it out to the yard and we would let the balloon go in hopes that it would land somewhere and someone would find your letter and
really?
Respond to you. And this was stopped in grade 3 because they informed us that the balloons, they would pop at a certain point in the air.
Uh-huh.
And that the remnants of the balloon would land somewhere, and cows were eating the balloons.
You're essentially littering.
It was a horrible idea by mm-hmm. some of these teachers.
Yeah, I think so. What some people don't realize is littering isn't just maybe dropping something. You can release something, and it can go up, but it must come down.
Did you ever have a propensity for littering?
No.
Some people do it just because they feel that as taxpayers, they are stimulating the economy by creating a demand for people to clean their garbage. That as taxpayers, the public land is their land to use however they feel appropriate.
That is really stupid. That's like saying, I'm going to rob a bank because that'll keep the cops in business. That'll keep the insurance companies in business. It's about around the same lines of logic.
I was once on a streetcar where this woman was sitting by herself, and all of a sudden she opened the window and just yelled across the street, "Pick up your garbage or you can leave this country, okay?" And then she just closed the window and sat right back down, and she was just by herself.
Well, good for her.
She scared a lot of people.
Good. And hopefully people...
A militant recycler.
Hopefully people start picking up their garbage. Although I do have to say, once I tossed my gum out of a moving car, and...
But what else are you to do?
Hold on to it. I was later told. But you know what?
That's uncomfortable.
The person I was riding next to was like, you shouldn't do that, because animals might come and pick up and eat your gum. And ever since, I stopped doing
that. That's a hell of a stretch from one to the other, that your gum will kill an animal. Or are you on a highway?
As much of a stretch as a cow eating a popped balloon with a letter in it.
Gum tends to, though, not disintegrate, but at least flatten out into those black marks you see on the street.
Not always, but maybe. All right. Enough. Enough. Are we doing this? What's going on?
I forgot to watch this pay-per-view. No, I'm kidding. King of the Ring 1996. From Milwaukee, Wisconsin, on June the 23rd of 1996 at the Mecca Arena. This was the fourth pay-per-view version of the King of the Ring. It was a big house show event in the late 80s, the likes of Jim Duggan, Harley Race. There were numerous kings. I believe Junkyard Dog won it once. It was always just a house show theme that they would use for their New England house shows once a year. And the last one was in 1991, won by Bret Hart. And then they turned it into a pay-per-view event in 1993, which Bret Hart won again. And then in following years, Owen Hart would win it. 1995 was a year that they never referenced, where Mabel became King Mabel.
Mm-hmm.
A horrendous event that we have reviewed. That was actually, I believe, our second review ever.
No, wow.
Back in September of 2009, me and Way reviewed that. So you can check out the archives for that. And that brings us to this show. The King of the Ring 96, a very interesting time period in wrestling. Kevin Nash and Scott Hall had just debuted in WCW. This was a month after the Click incident at Madison Square Garden on their final night with Hunter, Shawn, Nash, and Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And Triple H received the brunt of that punishment, and this was the first example of it.
He was not on the show.
He was not on this show. A show where he was scheduled to win the King of the Ring.
Oh, is that right?
He was scheduled to win. Austin was not their original choice.
Isn't that amazing? So instead of this Steve Austin promo, we could have had something completely different.
It could have been WrestleMania 14, Michaels versus Hunter, with Ross yelling, "The Hunter era is upon us."
Yeah, and...
Would have taken us to new heights.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Steve Austin would be married to Stephanie right now, wearing a mechanical brace on his arm.
Boy, in some alternate reality, this probably exists.
Hunter would be hosting the Redneck Challenge that he just finished up for CMT.
Wow.
Lots of parallels we could probably make, because mm-hmm. their worlds would have gone in completely different directions had it not been for Hunter fucking up a month ago.
Yep.
So we start off the show here. And there was an opening video setting up all of the matches for tonight, including the Ultimate Warrior against Jerry the King Lawler. This was the Ultimate Warrior's return to the WWF after leaving in the... he had left at one point after 1991. then came back in 92, left after it was revealed that he was using and apparently distributing steroids at a time when they had severely cracked down. They let a few years pass, and then Ultimate Warrior returned in 96 at WrestleMania, squashing Triple H. And then this was his second pay-per-view appearance since his return, taking on Jerry Lawler.
The first, of course, when he showed up in WrestleMania 12, defeating Triple H.
Yes. And that was the match, of course, where Hunter came in and proposed this big, elaborate match, and Warrior just said, no, this is how the match is going to go. You're going to sell for me, and then I'm going to beat you. We'll see if this goes 90 seconds. I doubt it. I'm not feeling it tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And that was that for Ultimate Warrior and Triple H. So tonight's show, it was going to be headlined by Shawn Michaels against the British Bulldog, and they were billing this as the greatest card in the history of the King of the Ring.
Doubtful.
Well, it certainly was going to be better than the 1995 Mabel version, mm-hmm. where we got three Mabel matches in one night.
Yeah.
This was also interesting because the King of the Ring, as much as it's fondly remembered by people, wasn't always a huge draw on pay-per-view, and that is why on this particular card, they only put the semifinals on the show to include more matches on the show that maybe would have more consequence if people weren't interested in seeing guys wrestle three different times right. on one show. I always liked the tournament myself, the whole eight-man on pay-per-view, but that was their change. And then our announcers are Vince McMahon, Jim Ross, and Owen Hart.
Why was Owen a commentator on this?
Well, first of all, Jerry Lawler was in a match, so they replaced him. And Owen Hart at this point, I believe it was a legit injury he had where he had the cast on his hand and did commentary here in the match, though he did get involved later on in the show. He was a huge part of this show. So Owen Hart doing commentary for 3 hours. And what did you think about Owen on commentary?
I thought it was very entertaining. I thought Owen played a very good heel commentator, and he's a very witty guy, so played his role exceptionally well, and I thought didn't take away much focus away from the matches. He was, he managed to get over his character, managed to side with the heels, all the while still maintaining focus on the matches. So
yeah, that's always one of the most difficult parts, I think, when a wrestler does commentary. It's, we said it before, it's very difficult to go from being a great promo into a great announcer because they're serving completely different purposes here where you're trying to get heat on what's happening for the viewer at home in the ring as opposed to just on yourself here.
Yes.
And that's a tough transition for some. First matchup of the night, it was one of the semifinals of the King of the Ring tournament. Steve Austin taking on Mark Marrow accompanied by Sable.
A very different Steve Austin. Steve Austin right now, of course, still wrestling as a heel and coming out to not the same theme song that he would later be known to come out to.
And this was just after Ted DiBiase had left the company and was going to WCW, and Austin had ditched the Ringmaster moniker just prior to this along with DiBiase. So this was definitely a different presentation of Steve Austin than we had seen in months before. Past.
He had also just recently debuted the Stone Cold Stunner on Savio Vega in the
What an over move that was on this show.
Well, yeah, nobody knew, right? And this was also before he put the kick in there. But he did it to Savio Vega in the quarterfinals, and that led to this match.
Yeah, he beat Bob Holly and Savio Vega to get to the semifinals, and Mark Marrow defeated Skip of the Body Donnas and Owen Hart to qualify, of which Owen calls him a cheater. And this Mark Marrow is always a polarizing guy. Some people think he was just horrible and overpushed, but I always felt when he was in there with the right guys, when you paired him with, like in this case, a Steve Austin or a Diamond Dallas Page in WCW, where he was great for your opening match, where you could put him out there for a 15-minute opener and could really get the crowd into things, and that's what I thought we saw in this match. He hit a tilt-a-whirl head scissors early on and then teased a dive to the floor. And Owen refers to Sable as a hose bag.
Hose bag?
A hose bag.
Huh.
So I guess you're not as bad as a whore, but you are what they carry around.
Huh.
And put their money in.
Hose bag.
Their whore money. Austin gets the advantage, knocking Marrow to the floor and starts to work on the back of Marrow as they play up the methodical nature of Austin. And Austin uses a Boston Crab. He does a spot where he pulls Marrow to the middle of the ring, where he gets near the ropes, but eventually breaks out of it. And Merrill started to get a series of near falls with Vince McMahon in full Vince McMahon near fall mode.
Mm-hmm.
He's got him. It's over. No. Classic Vince McMahon here. I love this Vince McMahon version. Merrill goes for a sleeper, but Austin counters with a jawbreaker, which is sort of like the stunner that Ross notes. And this is where Austin ended up doing the jawbreaker, and he bit through his own tongue.
Is that what happened?
Yes. Bit through his tongue here and would have to receive stitches later on and then come back to do the main event. And I don't know how much of that is kind of a glorified or an urban legend, but that was always the story, that he had to go to the hospital and then come back to the arena with stitches. So I've never heard that wasn't a true story. He legit had stitches, you could tell, in the main event.
Yeah.
They go for a replay, and a bit of a fuck up here where they went to the replay and it was a shot of Ahmed Johnson and Vader. So not the cleanest production here from the WWF. Merrill hit a series of punches in the corner, a double axe off the top, and then tosses Austin over the top. Merrill then hits a somersault splash to the floor, and then a top rope Hurricane Rana, only gets a two count, and Austin comes back with a kick to the gut, drops Merrill throat first on the top rope, and then finally hits the stunner. 16 minutes and 50 seconds these two went, with Austin advancing to the finals. I thought this was a good opener.
I thought it was a very good match. I thought both men looked very good. Merrill, very good as well. Austin, of course, despite being a heel, he was already getting cheered very much in this match. His style is just so full of intensity, and I think that's really what won the crowd over. It's just how intense, and like, the guy's wrestling looks reckless, but it's not sloppy at all. He's just like, just so full of energy, and that was very apparent even at this point.
Doc Hendricks, Michael Hayes, is in the back doing interviews, and he's with Jake the Snake Roberts, who they're pushing throughout this show as the sentimental favorite. And he says, of all the obstacles in his life, none are bigger than the King of the Ring. The recovering alcoholic. No, this is the biggest obstacle. And Roberts cites the Bible, says he was blind, but now he can see, and said he would rob a bank through the back door, not the front door. So still a criminal at heart. This was Jake Roberts doing his...
Christian gimmick.
Christian gimmick, which the real Jake Roberts, I guess, would emerge later.
Yeah.
Vader, accompanied by Jim Cornette, taking on Jake Roberts in the other semifinal match. Vader defeated Ahmed Johnson after Owen Hart attacked Ahmed with his cast on television, and then got a bye after the Ultimate Warrior and Goldust went to a double countout, and Vince was just doing the big sell job here on Jake, defying the odds at 41 years of age, and defeated Triple H and JBL to qualify.
Mm-hmm.
So, Hunter, not in good standing here. And this was when JBL was Justin Hawk Bradshaw, a number of gimmicks ago. And Vader immediately attacks the arm and splashes Roberts, gets a two count. Roberts gets a boot up in the corner and then a knee lift, and the crowd was into Jake as he calls for the DDT, but Vader drives him into the corner. And the story is that Jake never won a title in the WWF, but he's going after the King of the Ring crown. And then Vader misses a splash in the corner. Jake goes for the DDT, but upon hitting it, Vader reaches out and knocks the referee down, and they ruled that it was intentional, and Vader is disqualified at 3 minutes and 29 seconds for Jake to advance. And then in the post-match, Vader splashed Jake from behind in the corner, delivers a second splash, and then a Vader bomb as Cornette keeps the official in the corner and Jake is helped to the back, the injured old man who basically got the fluke advancement in the tournament.
I thought this was a very odd finish. I understand that they didn't want to draw Vader to Jake, but the execution of the spot was very confusing because it was Jake going for the DDT and Vader didn't really do anything. Vader might have bumped into the ref, maybe tapped his shoulder, but to DQ the person that was taking that move, I thought was a bit of a stretch, especially in the way it was executed. So not a great match.
No, very short, and they clearly were protecting Vader, which... it's like, put another heel in the role or something. It was just, and not even a very convincing DQ, but nonetheless, it was short. They plugged the superstar line where you could call in to talk to the winners and losers of all the matches. Maybe they'll bring this back eventually.
Sure.
For the WWE Network.
Well, you could tweet them now.
I guess so.
Point.
Hendricks is with the Smoking Guns and Sonny, and they ask about Cloudy becoming the new manager of the Body Donnas. And Sonny talks about how Vinnyus is going to be distracted tonight, and they show Billy Gunn here, who has a crush on Sonny.
No, more than a crush. I guess you would assume that they were sleeping together.
Perhaps. This was back when Sonny didn't no-show events, as she does now.
Ah, that's right. Yep. I thought Sonny was a great promo. Billy Gunn, not as much in this. Billy Gunn, at one point, he's like, she's beautiful, she's an award winner, she's a manager. And that was it. That was the extent of the promo.
And that leads us to the Smoking Guns taking on the Godwins, who were accompanied by Hillbilly Jim, Smoking Guns defending the tag titles, and the Godwins came out with goats.
Yeah.
That was part of their entrance.
Mm-hmm.
So these goats had to hang around in the back all day long.
Mm-hmm.
Great addition to this act. Billy gets on the mic and says he made Sonny feel like Vinnyus never could. And then Bart attacks Vinnyus from behind for the advantage to start the match. And Vinnyus pulls the boot off of Billy and tries to attack him with it. And they play up Vinnyus having one of his quote-unquote episodes. He's got anger management issues, I guess.
Yeah.
He's just a simple farm boy with anger. And Cloudy is in the back and is welcomed to the WWE by Vince and says that he fills out the outfit of the Body Donnas a lot more than Sonny does, and then blows a kiss. The cross-dressing, tattooed man valet of the Body Donnas, Cloudy. What a well-remembered gimmick this was. The opposite of Sonny, Cloudy.
Somebody's claim to fame in their career was portraying this cross-dressing version of Sonny.
Yes, they were trying to replicate Sonny in a clever manner. And dare I say that Cloudy was a miscast in this role.
Yeah, you could say that.
Billy kicks Henry in the back from the apron. They shift the advantage to the heels. There was a long time in here while Henry was in selling for the heels. Bart eventually comes in without a tag, and the referee doesn't stop it. All I noted here was that Bart really looked like Jose Canseco at this point.
It kind of does, without the mustache.
Yeah.
Sure.
Bart misses a top rope leg drop, which looked extremely painful for his tailbone. And Henry makes the hot tag to Vinnyus, and they all four are in the ring. The Godwins are beating down on the Guns, and it leads to Bart grabbing his boot and hitting Vinnyus from behind with the referee's back turned, and Billy pins Vinnyus at 10 minutes and 10 seconds. The Smoking Guns keep the tag titles.
Not a great match, but the crowd was into it by the end.
It was mainly the story. It was just Sonny and Vinnyus, which I didn't have much interest in to begin with. So if you enjoy a match where Henry Godwin sells for 75% of the match, this is the match for you. And then Hendricks is in the back with the Bulldog, Jim Cornette, Clarence Mason, and Cornette quotes Dick Murdoch and says that they have all the odds in their favor tonight for the title match, and they have an official that they can trust in Mr. Perfect, who is shown in the background sharing the locker room with the heels. And they state that Mr. Perfect will call it right down the middle tonight, leading to fans thinking that Shawn Michaels is fucked tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Lawler comes out with taped fists, and he goes on to the King podium and says that he's been there and done that. And then he proceeds to insult the people of Milwaukee. He insults the Milwaukee Brewers. He calls the fans losers and drunks. He walks down the aisle and calls a girl fat. And then she gives him the finger and yells, fuck you, at Jerry Lawler. And
this is so great.
He then told one of the girls that it's girls like you that turn men into guys like gold dust. And then says the Warrior has overstayed his welcome. And they replay an angle where he had a picture of the Ultimate Warrior framed in glass. And this was an infamous story on the Ultimate Warrior DVD where Warrior was so scared of this angle that the glass wasn't gimmicked, that he wore a baseball hat to the ring to cushion the portrait being slammed on his head.
That's why he was wearing a hat. The Ultimate Warrior. Well,
good.
He
wasn't a fan of unprotected headshots.
Like the hat's going to do.
He needed a hat.
Like the baseball cap is going
to
do.
That's what Gary Coleman did in that WCW angle. And he had to take the guitar shot to the head from Jarrett.
This was the Ultimate Warrior coming out as the Ultimate Warrior does in a baseball cap and ponytail. But I thought Lawler was hilarious. Lawler was just so much better as a heel compared to what he is today. He just comes out and just insults everybody. This was just him coming out and insulting people. That's all you need.
Great got heat. A lot of heat here. He always, in his limited angles that he did during this time, always got a lot of heat. And Lawler hits Warrior from behind with a scepter, a common start to a number of the matches, with the heel getting the heat from behind to start the match. And then chokes him on the floor, chokes him with his jacket. Fans are chanting Burger King. And then Lawler chokes him with a tape in the ring, keeps this up for a while as the official just allows it. And Vince calls attention to how this referee is being very liberal with the rules in this match. Mm-hmm. And Warrior starts his no-sell comeback with a bunch of shoulder blocks, clotheslines, then a jumping shoulder block for the win. 3 minutes and 50 seconds as the crowd pops big for the comeback and the win. Ultimate Warrior was certainly over, but certainly not designed for long matches, and they kept this really, really short.
Yeah, a very forgettable match and an equally forgettable run in the company for the Warrior.
This would be his last pay-per-view match with the company. He would disappear again after this. The Smoking Guns and Sonny, they're on the Superstar line, and then Doc Hendricks is with Gorilla Monsoon in Jake Roberts' locker room with a medical update following the attack by Vader. And Monsoon says that he will allow him to continue, but if he feels the need to stop the match, he will do so. This was a original Keith Kaiser here, that Gorilla Monsoon. And then we go to The Undertaker with Paul Bearer taking on Mankind, their first ever singles match, Way. The lesser-known King of the Ring match between The Undertaker and Mankind,
yes,
without the cell. And the lights are out. And while Mankind is in the ring awaiting Taker to make his entrance, and then the lights turn on, and it's Taker attacking the heel from behind to start the match.
This was cool, though, the way they did that. When the lights dim, of course, Taker, instead of accompanying Paul Bearer, he's already up, perched on the top turnbuckle, and a huge pop when the lights come on.
This was the Undertaker going through his purple attire phase, where he wore purple gloves. And Mankind gets the advantage, hits his elbow off the apron to the floor. Mankind's still a very new character. He just debuted after WrestleMania. Mankind grabs a bunch of chairs from under the ring and runs at Taker with one of them, but ends up taking a big boot into the chair and a back body drop on the floor onto the chair, and takes a chair shot to the back as they return to the ring. Taker goes for the tombstone, but Mankind counters with a swinging neck breaker. Mankind then attempts the mandible claw, becomes a long rest hold as Taker fights him off and sends Mankind to the floor. And the announcers, you could tell, were really trying to put over Mankind here for how tough he was and forcing the Undertaker to adapt during the match. And Mankind took an ungodly amount of punishment during this match. He took chair shots to the head. He was diving off the apron onto the concrete. He was thrown into the steel steps. Mankind eventually hit a pile driver to Taker and then grabs the urn from Paul Bearer. But as he goes to attack Taker, Paul Bearer grabs the urn back and then applies the mandible claw. Taker grabs him by the throat, but he runs into the urn accidentally as Paul Bearer is still standing on the apron. And with Undertaker knocked out from the urn, Mankind applies the mandible claw and gets the clean win. 18 minutes and 20 seconds over The Undertaker, firmly establishing Mankind as a threat here. And afterwards, Mankind runs after Paul Bearer, and Undertaker staggers after Mankind. But this was a big deal, Mankind beating The Undertaker.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't exactly a clean win. Bearer did get involved.
Well, clean by Undertaker standards,
sure.
I thought.
What was funny was that Owen actually immediately suggests that perhaps Bearer did it on purpose.
Yes, he did, and Mankind says, that's crazy, that's crazy. And this was back at a time when they did book things out from a certain period of time, and I'm sure they knew where they were going with this.
Uh-huh.
Or not, who knows?
Who knows?
And this would build up to the big Boiler Room match at SummerSlam.
Mm-hmm. An alright match, but not too memorable amongst all the matches these two have had.
No, more so just kind of establishing Mankind as this big heel threat to The Undertaker and unseating him. Doc Hendricks is with Mr. Perfect and asks about sharing the locker room with the Bulldog, and Michaels walks in to confront Mr. Perfect and says that he's worked too hard for Perfect to blow this, and Perfect says that Michael seems nervous, but he's going to call it right down the middle. And this was actually a bit of a long-term, not long-term booking, but at least referencing a past event where 2 years prior at WrestleMania, and Jim Ross brought this up later in the show, Mr. Perfect was brought in as the guest referee for the title match between Yokozuna and Lex Luger. And everyone assumed that Mr. Perfect would be this fair ref and Michaels or Luger would get his big win. But instead, Perfect ended up disqualifying Luger, and it led to people here thinking, well, is Perfect going to do the same here, and we're going to see a new champion? So it was playing off a past match from 2 years ago. And Owen Hart gets on Hendrix's case here for not mentioning how Owen is at ringside here, and he could screw Shawn Michaels. He says, why didn't Doc point out that I'm here at ringside? I could cause this match to be going in the Bulldog's corner. But I would never do that, of course. But Doc, you should be on your game. It's as if Owen was cutting up Doc Hendricks here for not understanding just how significant the numbers were in the favor of the heels.
Mm-hmm.
Then we go to Goldust defending the Intercontinental title against Ahmed Johnson. And how is this match set up, Way, on Raw?
All right, here's the angle. Ahmed Johnson was, of course, facing... Who did he face? This was a King of the Ring qualifying match. Ahmed Johnson faced Vader, and Vader took him out, I believe, due to interference from Owen and his cast. So Ahmed, being very injured, was taken out on a stretcher. And as he's being wheeled into the ambulance, Goldust runs in and sees this helpless man lying on a stretcher and decides to give him mouth-to-mouth. And after giving him mouth-to-mouth, Ahmed Johnson wakes up, sees this gold lipstick all over his lips, and he freaks out. A man kissed him on the lips!
As Vince McMahon called it, gross!
So this is the basis of this feud. One man kissed another man, and Ahmed Johnson doesn't like being kissed on the mouth by another man.
Yep, be a star.
And he's out to get some revenge right now.
Yeah, so it's good old-fashioned gay bashing.
This
is a very controversial character at the time. In 1996, this was extremely controversial.
And
those standards.
Yeah.
As silly as it looks today.
It's an odd angle, though, because I wouldn't exactly call this... This is not gay bashing. Like,
no,
I mean,
it's a man who is...
A man kisses you on the mouth. Anybody kisses you. A woman kisses a man on
would
the mouth.
Would Ahmed attack a woman if a woman had done this to him?
If it was a very ugly woman? No, he would not attack a woman. But, okay, a man kisses another woman. The woman has every right to attack the
man. As Owen Hart pointed out here, Goldust saved the man's life.
That was the funniest part, is Owen defending Goldust here.
Owen's commentary during this match was so great.
Owen's like, I don't know why Ahmed Johnson is so upset. The man saved his life. This was basic CPR. He should be indebted to him.
I agreed with Owen. I didn't understand Ahmed having a beef here. Johnson rushes to the ring here to attack Goldust right away at the start of the match.
He is pissed. You kissed me?
He had kept this inner rage inside of his body until Goldust made his way to the ring, and then he sprinted out. And early on, Johnson knocks Goldust to the floor, and much like our review of Big T's match at Uncensored 2000, Ahmed decided to do something insane on pay-per-view. At the Uncensored show, he did a leap over the barricade. On this show, he did a clean tope over the top rope to the floor. I thought he was dead. The angle that he landed on, I thought he was dead.
He landed on his head.
Holy shit.
This is the stupidest looking move I've ever seen. Ahmed Johnson, at his weight, I guess with
Bulldog did something stupider later, but this was damn close.
With his limited agility to attempt anything like this, I don't care how angry you are. I don't care how many times you were kissed by another man. This was just stupid. This was so bad.
I want to review more pay-per-views with Ahmed Johnson on it because he goes crazy on pay-per-view.
Yeah.
This was... He looked like he was dead here upon landing. He gets up, though. Tosses Goldust into the steps. He lifts up the steps and misses throwing them into the post. And then Johnson misses Goldust in the corner, and he hits the ropes. He doesn't even hit the turnbuckle. He runs into the side rope here and goes to the floor. And this is when Vladimir the Superfan makes a cameo.
Oh.
He leans into the shot to make sure we all see him here. And Goldust then drops the steps on Ahmed, and this is where Goldust gets the heat. And Owen refers to Ahmed as a brute.
a brute. And at one point, as Goldust is out, Goldust starts rubbing his back and continues with the heat with lots of stalling. And the best part here was when Goldust had a choke applied. Ahmed's version of selling a choke was closing his eyes and pretending to sleep. That's what this man looked like. Goldust then continued with a pile driver. He crawled onto Ahmed for a pin in a seductive fashion, attacked the lower back. Owen says that in a match so important, I wouldn't have time for fondling. Not in a match of this importance. Fondling is well and good, but not in a match this important.
Owen is actually, at this point, Owen himself is starting to question Goldust's tactics.
Owen's almost like defending the act of fondling during a match. He's understanding the psyche of Goldust. Ahmed starts to fight back. Ahmed's selling just killed me. It was just so boring. He eventually misses with a drop kick, then uses a sleeper. Goldust uses a sleeper, and he goes from mouth to mouth onto Ahmed. And this was like Hogan hulking up. Ahmed responds from the homosexuality running through Goldust's veins, and he lifts up and fights back, and he hits a spinebuster, and then he hits the Pearl River Plunge, which I think was probably the name of an erotic movie at the time. Ah. The Pearl River Plunge, and he gets the win at 15 minutes and 33 seconds. Heterosexuality wins the Intercontinental title, and homosexuality loses at King of the Ring 1996. Wait, yes. That was the message here.
Well, this was the war, yes. This was straight men versus homosexuals. But, whatever. Hey, man, this was 1996, a very different time by today's standards.
In pro wrestling. And Owen says that Ahmed only won because Goldust breathed new air into his lungs.
Yeah.
He did give him more mouth-to-mouth in this match, so there is prudence to that argument.
Yeah, I mean, I found this entertaining because just of how, I guess the controversy with the gimmick was something to see for its time. I, to be honest, I think I was just shocked at how much of this was happening. And how I don't think they'd be able to get away with an angle like this today.
I don't think it would have the edginess. I think this would be really lame today if you were to present this. This was something that was very taboo at this point for USA Network to put on their air, and a very controversial character that had its time, and the character really, I think 1996 was certainly the peak point of this character.
Yes, but there were parts of this match where I was like, okay, I get it. Like, I get it. He's a very over-sexualized gay man who, and I guess since he's gay, he loves to fondle straight men.
But then he wasn't gay. It was mind games.
Oh, okay, it was mind games.
That's how they explained it.
It was just enough. I had enough towards the end.
Did you see the promo for the following month's pay-per-view? Based around aliens.
Yes, I did.
Oh,
Jesus Christ. Talk about the budget of some of these in-your-house commercials. The worst alien costumes imaginable. These were some two aliens that are sitting in the living room next to the fan, the WWE fan, who's an editor
Adam.
Of theirs.
Yes, Adam, the redhead.
Adam, the super fan. Yeah, he's in the living room, and these aliens are talking in their robot voices. They're watching the WWE. And the guys like, the aliens are like, who is that specimen? And the super fan's like, that's Sunny, she's a babe. And the aliens are like, she needs to be teleported here for further inspection. And Sunny is teleported into their living room. In your house, watch it, buy it, buy our show.
Alien rape. That's what was insinuated here.
Sure.
She needs further inspection.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I wish I could go back in time and not order this pay-per-view.
In your house?
Or, yes.
Oh, you did?
No, I'm saying I did not order it the first time, but I wish I could go back now and not order it again.
Yeah, it was lame.
Based on this commercial.
Very bad.
Then, Brian Pillman comes out. The recently signed Brian Pillman comes out on crutches for an interview with Jim Ross. And, of course, Brian Pillman, who had been the talk of the industry here, basically worked his own angle to get released by WCW. He had pretty much come up with this whole scheme to basically get a new contract with WCW. And he was able to work Eric Bischoff in hopes of getting a big six-figure contract with WCW. And then he got into a Humvee accident, and he ended up getting there was a bidding war, and the WWF still wanted to sign him after the Humvee accident, and he ended up signing with WWF after Eric Bischoff had fired him to get the angle over, and it backfired on WCW. But here he was. I believe this was his first appearance in the WWF. And he cuts. At the time, he was just doing all these crazy promos to get people thinking that, you know, he's shooting here on TV. He made a Jeffrey Dahmer reference. He calls Ross a stupid son of a bitch, and he's here to rape, pillage, and plunder the WWF. And they apologize for Pillman's language. But the interesting part here for fans of Brian Pillman was that as he's walking back to the backstage area, Steve Austin is coming up out for his next match, and they cross paths and eye one another. So for Hollywood Blonde fans, this was a cool little moment.
Totally.
And playing off their history. So Austin is out here for his next match. They play up the big rib injury to Jake Roberts, and he comes out. They set up Austin here that he had to have 16 stitches placed in his mouth after the first match with Mark Merrow. And Austin just beats down Roberts, takes the tape off of his ribs. Gorilla Monsoon comes down to the ring, teasing that he's going to call the match off. But then Roberts fights back. They give him the hope spot. He calls for the DDT, but gets stopped by Austin, who runs him into the corner. He poses on the ropes, hits the stunner, 4 minutes and 38 seconds. The big feel-good story of Jake Roberts was not to be, and Steve Austin wins the King of the Ring.
You know, they put all the focus of this main event, or of this finals, onto Jake Roberts, and really, up until the end here, no focus whatsoever on Austin. No promo from the guy, really no attention placed on Steve Austin.
No, and it's funny because, you know, history looks back at this event as this huge turning point for Steve Austin because it featured the big promo that he cut right after this match and how the King of the Ring was the springboard for so many guys. And with Austin, that really wasn't the case. Like, he won this King of the Ring, but he was never really positioned. Like, at SummerSlam that year, he was in the free-for-all match. He was not in a higher pushed position after this show. It wasn't until the Bret Hart feud that fall that really catapulted him. And to me, I've always looked at it as the WrestleMania match that, you know, he had been gaining all this momentum, and the WrestleMania match was the real breakout match. But people often look back here because of the promo here that he cut afterwards as the big shooting off point for Austin. And this is where he comes up to the podium with Doc Hendricks, and everyone's heard the promo from now. He talks about Austin 316 and makes the biblical reference and telling Jake Roberts to get out of the WWF. And what was interesting here, no reaction to this promo. Crowd didn't care at all about this. And this was a historically significant promo.
Yeah, yeah. Well, perhaps that was just due to them being deflated, them not caring enough about the Steve Austin push up until this point. But nonetheless, I thought it was a great promo, a classic promo.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mr. Perfect comes out for the main event, and they recap last month's pay-per-view, which had tons of technical problems because of a blackout at that pay-per-view. It was a massive headache for the company. But the main event was Shawn Michaels and British Bulldog on that show, and it featured Bulldog running into a referee who took the ref bump of all ref bumps to the floor. It was just, this ref was killed as he fell to the floor. And the finish came with an overhead belly-to-back suplex by Shawn Michaels with both men's shoulders on the mat, and the three count was made, and they ruled that Shawn Michaels won the match, but both men's shoulders were down, and that led to Mr. Perfect being announced as the guest referee to avoid any problems this month. And Owen Hart gets on the announce table cheering Bulldog's entrance as he comes down with his wife Diana Hart, Jim Cornette, and then Gorilla Monsoon comes out and rules that Mr. Perfect will officiate the match, but he will officiate on the floor, and Earl Hebner will be the official inside the ring, and the heels are all upset that their plan has been foiled, thinking that Mr. Perfect would help out the British Bulldog.
I didn't really get why they would do this at the last minute, because to me, the whole storyline of this match was whether or not Perfect would be turning, and you basically negated his role with this.
Yeah, it's like if you had this hesitancy about this guy, why did you name him the referee?
Yeah.
So the matchup begins, and this is where Ross brings up WrestleMania 10 with Mr. Perfect. Long headlock spot early on by Michaels at the spot at the start. He did a skin the cat, sending Bulldog to the floor. These two just worked an incredibly fast pace. We saw a Hurricane Rana off the apron to the Bulldog, and then he smacks Jim Cornette with the tennis racket. Series of arm drags by Michaels, and Bulldog then got the heat, sending Michaels to the floor with a press slam, dropping him on the floor. Jose Lothario was still in the corner of Shawn Michaels at this point during his title run. And Michaels is fired into the corner, takes that big Ray Stevens, Ric Flair bump into the corner where he flips over. For my money, as much as, you know, Shawn Michaels has just had this tremendous career, his series of matches in 1996, I would put up with almost anybody. At the pace he was working at, it was incredible. Just the level of worker he was during this time period when he was the champion.
Mm-hmm.
And Bulldog, you talk about a guy who, you know, was artificially gigantic. Just what you know, the girth this guy had put onto his body, which was a very natural frame, and how he could still work such a quick style, was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
So those were some of the highlights of the match. They went into Michaels going for a roll-up. Bulldog went for a power slam at one point, but Michaels got off his shoulders, went for the super kick, but Bulldog then stopped and took him down with a clothesline and hit a pile driver. This is when Bulldog climbed to the top rope and went for a clothesline off the top rope, but slipped in midair, and Owen immediately blamed Jose Lothario for shaking the ropes while Lothario was on the other side of the ring. And this may have been the first ever "you fucked up" chant in WWF history. It was very quiet, but there was no hiding this one, Way. This was an unfortunate botch for the Bulldog.
It looked so bad that I wondered if it was intentional, like if they intentionally did that for a double down.
I don't think so. That was my assumption. Bulldog drop kicks Michaels on the turnbuckle and then suplexed him off for a two count. We continue onwards. Michaels made his comeback with a running forearm. Both were down, and Michaels makes the kip up and scoop slam to Bulldog. And this knocks out Hebner, and then Michaels hits a top rope elbow drop as Hebner gets up. He hits the sweet chin music, and then as Earl Hebner goes to count three, Mr. Perfect climbs in, and they both count simultaneously, but Owen pulls out Perfect before he can count. So Earl Hebner makes the three count, and Michaels gets the win. They went 26 minutes and 25 seconds. Very strong match between the two. And afterwards, Owen's upset at Mr. Perfect for not screwing Shawn Michaels. And this leads to Michaels attacking Owen and Bulldog together after the match. He ducks the enziguri from Owen, which had knocked Michaels out in storyline the year prior. And then he puts the figure four onto Owen. Bulldog runs at him, and then Michaels rolls him up for a pinfall. The heels finally get the advantage after a spinning heel kick by Owen here.
Why did he roll him up for a pinfall after the match?
I guess maybe just to tease him. Okay. Look what I can do to you.
A very good match. A very good match. In fact, I think one of the British Bulldogs' best matches here. But I found the finish to be very confusing. I don't know why Hebner needed to be there, because Perfect played absolutely no role here. Even with the finish, Owen trying to pull Perfect out, it made no difference. Hebner came to with that ref bump. That ref bump made no sense either. It played no part in anything. So
yeah, I didn't like the finish that much. Mr. Perfect had no role in this match at all. Other than, well, we did a ref bump at the last pay-per-view, so we're bringing in the enforcer and teasing the idea he's going to screw the babyface.
It just really felt like Hebner's, him being put in there seemed like a last-minute call, and to what effect, I don't know. I don't know what it served.
So afterwards, the heels finally get the advantage on Michaels. Ahmed Johnson runs in for the save and gets a pop. Then Vader comes in and lays out Ahmed, and it's 3-on-2, and the crowd here started chanting for Warrior. They milked it with the baby faces selling, and then Warrior comes out to a massive pop, cleans house, and this would set up the six-man tag with Michaels, Ahmed, and the Ultimate Warrior against Vader, Bulldog, and Owen for the next month at International Incident. And this was announced on the King of the Ring Plus, a segment after the pay-per-view, where Gorilla Monsoon announced the main event. But, of course, Ultimate Warrior would never end up appearing on that pay-per-view, and they would call in Psycho Sid.
Ooh.
So that was the 96 King of the Ring.
Oh, you forgot the post-match promo between from Camp Cornette. Did you get to see that?
No, I didn't see that.
Well, perhaps this was a Coliseum exclusive.
Yeah, but, I guess so.
On my videotape, Cornette and Owen are talking. Owen says all he was doing was just giving Mr. Perfect a shove to tell him to count. to wake him up.
I loved Owen's explanation. Owen was such actions. He always justified everything.
And like such a smarmy but funny type of way. And, you know, just a very good promo.
I really enjoyed Owen on this show. He added a lot on commentary, put a lot of emphasis on the heels. He was hilarious during the Goldust match and added a lot in the main event as well. He never overshadowed anybody. I really enjoyed Owen on this show.
All in all, the main event was very good, very strong on this show. And that Merrill-Austin match I enjoyed as well. And, of course, you have that classic Austin promo. But aside from that, not much memorable.
I give this one a 5 out of 10. I always enjoy Michaels' matches from this time period. I think he was just fantastic, whether he was in with Bulldog or with Owen. Mm-hmm. Tremendous time period here for Shawn Michaels during that run. So I give this one a 5 out of 10. You know, you take out that main event in the promo, yeah, a pretty lackluster show.
Mm-hmm. 5 out of 10 for me as well.
All right, well, let's see what you guys have to say about it. We're going to head over to the message board, lawradio.proboards.com. We got a bunch of feedback for this show. So, Wei, why don't you start things off for us?
We'll go to Andrew O'Donnell, who says, I remember watching this event live on pay-per-view when I was 6. The fact that this event took place over 15 years ago and still vividly remembering this event is amazing. To me, this is one of the few shows that will pass the test of time because it has the great matches up and down, while also benefiting from those historical roots that don't come around every year. I mean, you got the first Mankind Undertaker match and the birth of Steve Austin's character in the WWE. I really appreciate these times in the WWE because they had storylines for the mid-carders as well as the top guys. Seemed like the whole roster was involved in something to progress, elevating the young future wrestlers. The Goldust character was absolutely groundbreaking for the time, as well as their questions about his gender preference. I mean, telling the crowd he's going to stick his tongue down everyone's throat is like obscene kind of heat that WWE unfortunately can't get away with anymore. A 10 out of 10 show.
Wow, 10 out of 10. Zach Volk, I like the King of the Ring pay-per-view concept. 96 was a good King of the Ring, much improved from 95 when the talent pool was lacking. The man of the night was unquestionably Stone Cold. I ordered this event, and at the time I was only marginally interested in Austin. After his coronation speech, he completely won me over, and it was a cutting-edge promo for the time. The Warrior and Ahmed matches were ugly, but the Taker-Mankind match was really enjoyable. I still feel that Mankind was Taker's best rival. At this time, their characters and wrestling styles worked so well together. The title match was good, but I enjoyed Bulldog and Shawn's match at In Your House the month prior better. Not sure what Mr. Perfect as referee then shifted to being outside referee added to the match. The TV program seemed to be working towards an eventual angle with Shawn and Hennig, but it never happened. Do you guys know why? Was Hennig hurt still or had some backstage issues? I know he would leave the WWF later that year and then start wrestling in WCW not that long after. I always felt like Bulldog was underappreciated. He would get my vote for the next in line to get a WWE video release. Overall, I liked this show. It didn't have the greatest of matches, but it was in an era when I was recently getting back into wrestling and gets a huge nostalgia reaction from me and an 8 out of 10.
Do you know the reason why Hennig never worked that program?
Well, Hennig, when he retired in 91, had this Lloyd's of London policy, and he was actually getting an insurance policy claim as a result of retiring at the time, and it's one of the major reasons why Lloyd's of London stopped insuring wrestlers, because Hennig did make the return in 92 and then wrestled a bit in 1993, and it might have been after that when he got the policy. Hmm. But at this point, they wanted him to come back. But because of that policy, he never did in the WWF. And I don't know how that changed when he went to WCW. But I think Lloyd's of London, when he started wrestling in WCW, tried to get out of the policy. And I'm not sure the specifics. Hmm.
From Alan Jones, this show had a lot of duds mixed in, but it's certainly worth checking out for the main event and the opener, as well as some really great examples of promo work. Austin's famous one, of course, but also two classic ones from Pillman and Lawler. Owen's commentary work was gold throughout. I'm an unabashed WWF homer, but this really epitomizes how great their old model really was. Even at their darkest hour, they were bailed out by the simple formula of letting their talent get themselves over. The main issue I have with today's product isn't just the lack of urgency, it's the fact that everyone's promo work sounds like it's written by the same guy. It probably is. I know Austin's been pushing this idea to Vince for years, but if anyone can bring urgency and life back to the product, it's the individual performers who have everything on the line rather than the behemoth corporation with very little incentive not to just go through the motions. Let them talk. Tangent aside, this is a classic WWF promo work at its finest with two really great matches.
All right, we go to Christian Small. When I saw that you were going to review this show, I had to add my views. I really like this show, and it's still one of my favorites. The opening match between Mero and Austin was awesome, and while the finals between Austin and Jake was nothing special, it did what it was meant to do and lead to one of the greatest promos ever. As for the rest of the show, I remember this time as being one when the tag titles and Sonny were being traded like crazy. Oh, how art imitates life if the rumors are to be believed. The other highlights to me were Mankind and Taker, which made Mankind look great and was one of Taker's better matches. And of course, the main event. I always thought HBK and Bulldog had great matches and chemistry, and this match was no different. My only problem was the Mr. Perfect ref spot at the end, which could have helped make another rematch, but led to nothing. As a final note, I loved Owen on commentary and the entire commentary team. Overall, a great card that couldn't be ruined by Warrior Lawler or Goldust and Ahmed Johnson.
From Corey Ferreira, this is one of the better King of the Ring tournaments WWE has held. Austin and Miro had a killer opening match. Warrior and Lawler was awful, as was Goldust and Ahmed. Bulldog and Shawn had one of the best main event matches of 96, but this night belongs to Austin and the birth of 316, the phrase that would help raise the WWF from the ashes and begin the retaliation against WCW in the Monday Night War. But the real highlight of the show is Owen Hart doing commentary. He was so awesome, and it's fitting this review was released on the anniversary of his passing.
Yes. And we move over to Andrew Sheehy. This pay-per-view is remembered as one of the most important events in WWF/E history. The match between Shawn Michaels and the British Bulldog was very good, with the post-match antics overshadowing it. Who knew that this would be the Ultimate Warrior's last pay-per-view in the company? The Goldust-Ahmed match was a train wreck. The Undertaker-Mankind match was a great start to a feud that was, in my opinion, the best in pro wrestling in 96. However, the man who stood out on this pay-per-view was a man known as Stone Cold Steve Austin. His semifinal match with Mark Merrill was a dandy, with Austin showing toughness by working with a busted up lip. To top it all off, his win over Jake the Snake Roberts set the tone for what is one of the great speeches in pro wrestling history, which saw him say, Austin 316 says, I just whooped your ass. That promo was to that era what CM Punk's promo last year was to this generation of wrestling fans, as it planted the seeds for the Attitude Era, which kicked off as the following year's WrestleMania. Solid show, 8 out of 10.
From Dante. What a maneuver! Certainly one of the most memorable pay-per-views in history. This was one of the first events I went back to see when becoming a wrestling fan. I think the King of the Ring format is excellent when done right, and going in the favor of when done the right way and going in the favor of the right guy. The Austin 316 speech is obviously a huge and important moment for the Austin character, for the WWF, and in the history of pro wrestling. And to think that this was supposed to be Triple H's year. Kind of baffles your mind, doesn't it? Did you see this at the time? Is it just nostalgia, or was this truly a better era? I can't imagine the kids of the 2030s talking about our time this way, or was Punk's speech last summer our Austin 316?
I always think the opposite. I always think people always look back fondly on things when you add time into the equation, and I have no doubt that 20 years from now, people are going to be talking about, you know, guys like John Cena and Randy Orton. Those guys were, they're not like today. The guys don't live up to the likes of Brodus Clay.
I absolutely agree.
That's how every generation is. Believe mm-hmm. me, there was stuff from 10 years ago that people hated that 10 years later people look back on fondly. It's just natural with nostalgia and remembering things, especially from your childhood. You're always going to enhance them, I feel, just artificially.
I guess it's not always true of well, like, okay, let's look back at the 90s boy bands. Do people still look back on those things fondly or not fondly?
I think people laugh at it and look back on it not as – it's almost so cheesy it was great.
What about hair metal?
Hair metal. Hair metal was always great. That's not in debate. Whoa. Sebastian Bach. All right. We go on to Andrew McDonald. I haven't watched this pay-per-view in a while, and I'm likely going to just recite this pay-per-view from memory. At the time, I remember Austin being a somewhat generic wrestler after breaking off from Ted DiBiase and coming up with his new finisher, the Stunner, a week prior to qualifying for the semifinals. Mark Merrill was a hot babyface at the time, and I really bought into the Cinderella story that Jake Roberts had going on, just being a 10-year-old. I remembered Jake from when I was even younger, and I wanted to see him come out on top. I was upset in the end, but looking back, it was definitely one of the biggest moments in pro wrestling history, and Jake's tragic loss really helped put over Austin as a heel. As for the Michaels-Bulldog match and feud, I was confused about what Jim Cornette, Bulldog, and Diana were claiming. Did he smack her bum? Did he poke her boob? Was he just talking to her, and that was why Bulldog was mad? Oh, to be 10 again. I can't imagine being a preteen during the Attitude Era. How confusing would that have been for some naive kids? The show was okay. I give it a 6 out of 10. That's right. There was a backstory here where Michaels and Diana did this weird angle where Diana accused Shawn of wanting her, and Shawn turned her down.
Was that for the match previous to this one?
Yeah, I think so.
No mention of that was made.
Yeah, there was. It was probably, before the first match. And right. I remember Brett hated that. They didn't want Diana to be portrayed as this hooker, I guess.
Mm. Let's go to Julian, who says, my memories of this pay-per-view, besides the giant crown hanging above the ring, were the first semifinal match between Austin and Mero was maybe Mero's best match in the WWF. I really thought after Jake Roberts won the DQ against Vader, won via DQ against Vader, they let him win the whole thing, especially since he had a huge Defeat Your Demons campaign weeks before the pay-per-view. I totally forgot about the tag titles match. It must have been the time when Sunny switched her gimmick every other week for managing another team. And then she split the guns by making Billy fall in love with her, Bart being the rational character always focused on the matches. Pillman became one of my favorites that night. I'd never heard of him before, and his charisma in this promo was amazing. Austin 316 was born after he squashed Jake Roberts like the hyena he was called by Bret Hart 1 year from that. I can remember I was totally disappointed Austin wouldn't wear the crown and robe. Overall, an okay pay-per-view leading into the mediocre pre-Attitude era, having Sid as world champion and Austin being the next big thing.
I don't think it suits a lot of guys to adopt the King gimmick just when they win this. I mean, it's very comedy-based, and I don't think you would have wanted to go
maybe
back.
Maybe not King Steve. You know, maybe not the full crown and scepter, but to sit on the throne, you want to have that visual. Why not?
It didn't matter to me at all. Trent writes in with his thoughts on the show. It can't be stated enough just how good Shawn Michaels was during this time. The match with Bulldog was phenomenal, and both complemented each other so well. This was the apex of the greatest wrestler of all time, and his work here will always hold up. Mark Mero gets crapped on all the time, and I've never understood why. He has a great look, ton of natural charisma, good athleticism, and from what I can tell, was a great worker from 94 to 97. At the time, I think he deserved the crown more than Austin, who at this time really lacked any kind of charisma or presence of said superstar. Jake looked and worked like he was 61, not 41. The Goldust and Ahmed dynamic was very fun and interesting. Ahmed looks like he would be the most homophobic person on planet Earth and would have absolutely no tolerance for anything slightly gay, and was the perfect victim for Goldust's homoerotic antics and to deliver the payoff for them. Owen was decent on commentary, but if most guys can just be a heel on commentary, it's not that hard. I would disagree with that. Taker Mankind was all right, and this was just the feeling out process for these two. Taker would get much better as the year progressed, because all of his long-term feuds of the past 5 years have been with giant stiffs, and now he's with someone who could work. This was also historic in that it would be Warrior's final appearance on WWE television. Decent show overall, some good wrestling, and for the most part, some strong storyline progression.
Our next comment comes from the best there is. This show is mainly remembered for the Austin 316 promo after he won the tournament, with the WWE hype machine telling us that he instantly shot to stardom after this. But really, it was the feud with Bret a few months later that put him in the main event scene. This just gave him a marketable t-shirt to go along with that. People will surely disagree, but I think he would have made it with or without the promo, assuming he still got the same push, of course. Besides that, we have newcomer Mankind beating the established main event star Undertaker clean with his finisher. What a strange way to try and get somebody over, huh? This feud was a great breath of fresh air for Taker after literally years of facing fat heel after fat heel, and it ended up as one of his most memorable programs. Then we had Shawn and Davey in what I thought was a disappointing match considering the level Shawn was at in 96. The Mr. Perfect ref stuff was baffling in that they spent the whole show teasing that he was with Camp Cornette, but then nothing came of it. Owen on commentary was fun too. Overall, I give the show a 5.5 out of 10, but not something really worth going out of your way to see.
All right, let's go wrap us up for feedback. Thanks to those of you that posted your comments. We always put up a thread going into the weekend where you can post your thoughts on whatever show we are reviewing the following week, as we will be doing this coming week. And way next week, a big edition of Review Away, because someone is coming back.
Who?
Well, that was your cue to reveal it.
Oops, sorry. Yes, our good buddy Damian Abraham from the band Fucked Up, who
just got nominated for a Much Music Video Award.
Oh, is that right?
That is true.
Well, very nice. Well, Damian, as per many requests from listeners, a very popular guest reviewer of ours, and we always love having him on the show.
And we let Damian make the selection of what we're going to review next week, and he has selected coming off of last week's Impact Wrestling main event, we are going to review Kurt Angle versus Samoa Joe, an Iron Man match from the January 2007 Final Resolution pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm. He actually selected this match before that even took place on TV.
That is true.
We'll have to ask him why this match.
Yes, it was a very random selection, but then after Impact, made perfect sense.
Well, maybe he knows somebody.
Maybe he's got his ear to the ground in TNA and understands where they're going. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be coming up next week on Review Away. In the meantime, you can check out tons of stuff coming up. Friday, we'll be back with Review and Impact. It's me and Nate this week as Way is going to be out of the province. Mm-hmm. Another big weekend of traveling for you.
Yes.
And then Saturday night, we're going to have a UFC 146 post-show immediately after the pay-per-view on TSN Radio. That'll be myself and Jason Agnew. Sunday night, it's the Law's 15th anniversary show. We're going to be doing tons of calls all night, some classic clips, lots of fun stuff coming up, and Dan the Mouth Lavransky's Jabroni of the Decade and a Half.
Wow.
Coming up on Sunday. So lots of cool stuff, and I do want to thank all of you who came out this past Monday night for the live edition of Review a Raw from the Fox and Fiddle. There was a big turnout and a lot of fun doing the podcast live. So we will have to revisit that in the future. So thanks to those of you who came out. In the meantime, you can check out liveaudiowrestling.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Law Radio, at Way0937. And of course, go on our message board, lawradio.proboards.com. Me and Way are always lurking on there, so you never know when we can just chat wrestling 24 hours a day.
24 hours?
Why not?
Well, we do it for a good, I'd say maybe, 6 hours of the day.
What's another 20?
What's another?
18.
18, yeah.
Totally. Great math. All right, let's wrap things up as we go out here, Way. Do you have any music you want to hear on our way out?
Oh, Jesus. Nope. Do you?
Well, why not we find out how a boy band song does hold up in 2012? Here is, what's a group you want to hear from?
How about Boyzone? Is that a band?
Boyzone? I don't think it is. Though I hear it's a hilarious comedy sketch.
Okay, what am I thinking?
How about
of?
We listen to an ill-remembered group that was, didn't really hit it big. You know, they were not an NSYNC or a Backstreet Boys. They thought it was so clever, they were called Five. But instead of the letter F, they used the number 5. And this is If You're Getting Down.
A fine choice.
By 5.
Boyzone was a band.
Oh, they were a band.
Yeah. I don't know how I knew that. Oh, that's funny. If you're getting down, baby, I want it now, baby. Come and get it on, baby. I want it now.
Refresh your mind, because the boys are back in town with a different kind of funk. Who got the funk? We got the funk, right? Everybody wanna boogie down tonight. Now throw your hands up in the sky, move around from side to side. I got what it takes, the beats, the breaks, the funky bass. I give your body crazy shakes, come on.
I heard somebody say, what? She's at the party, so I'm gonna get me some. If you're getting down, baby, I wanna up
check. Snap your man, get your trouble. We'll be in there on the double. Guaranteed that we'll be hitting for six. Come on, yeah.
I heard somebody say, what? She's at